Hello and welcome to the fourth and final stream on this third night of Millennial 2020. So we're going to be finishing tonight with a woman who's been on before, I think twice before, and this is Philosophicat. Now, some people mispronounce it Philosophicat, but she really doesn't like that. The correct pronunciation is Philosophicat. So welcome to Millennial 2020.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here. It's always a pleasure. I think this is a really lovely holiday tradition you've got going, so I'm happy to be part of it.
Oh, thank you very much. So what we're going to talk about is we do have a single topic. We're going to be focusing on surviving lockdown, because obviously this year we've all suddenly become acquainted with this state of living in lockdown. And most of us, I'd certainly never experienced anything like that before. I think most of us hadn't. I mean, there's not really anything that it's comparable to, is there?
No.
I can't think of anything. I mean, you'd have to be something like hearing about your grandparents who were snowed in for one winter in the 1930s or something like that, something extreme and freakish like that. So this is something quite unheralded. And obviously it can take a toll on mental health, emotional health, as I think it has for many people. We're hearing about suicides and so on. And also it has ramifications on relationships and, of course, on businesses. So, it is something that's, as much as there are the economic consequences of lockdown and that just the bummer of not being able to do normal things anymore, there are also the psychological effects that one has to deal with. So, you take it away.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And I think those psychological effects are often, they're kind of invisible. And especially if you're locked away in your home, you know, it's even more invisible in that sense, because you're not even seeing anybody. And it's kind of funny because, I mean, you know, you and I are both like, you know, we're very much kind of hermits in a way. Like, neither one of us is the kind of person who likes to just go out and socialize all the time. So, you know, we're often in, you know, our own little self-imposed lockdown, but it's different when it's voluntary. And even, you know, even though I'm not one to, you know, want to go out to clubs or anything like that, it's like, I do still want to go to the gym. I do still want to be able to like do my shopping and not have to worry about it, right? And so that even for those of us who are normally quite introverted and even hermit-like, I think it's still taking a toll as well. So,
I mean, at first it was a bit of an interesting novelty. You know, when they said it was here in Britain, they said it would last 3 or 4 weeks. They said 3 weeks. We'll review it after 3 weeks. Yeah. And so that was the time frame that we were told to be thinking of at that point. But the novelty wore off. I remember about a week into it, suddenly thinking, God, it would be nice to go to a restaurant. And of course, it's like that case of you don't go to restaurants that often, but because you can't do it, suddenly it's something you'd really like to do. It's just one example, but anyway, sorry, go on.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you know, for a lot of people, there's a big sense of loss in their life in terms of just, you know, losing things that were meaningful to them. And maybe you've lost your job or your business, maybe you've been unable to see your friends or family, or your life plans have been interrupted. I've got a girlfriend who's you know, she's in the performing arts and she's worked so hard with ballet and singing and everything. And, you know, she's kind of approaching her mid-30s now. She just had a birthday and she's facing years of, you know, not being able to perform, no auditions, no theater performances. And it's like, what did she spend the last, you know, several years of her life working towards, only to have that kind of taken away when she's sort of like in her prime in terms of, you know, as a singer and stuff. And now that's like maybe never going to come back until, and even if it does come back, you know, she's saying like, oh, well, you know, I'll be so out of practice and, you know, we're all going to have to like start over from scratch with our training and stuff. It's like, it's things like that. And, you know, people can, you know, maybe brush that aside and be like, oh, it's just the arts. Nobody cares about that. It's like, but yeah, that, you know, that's still her dream. You know, it's still something she worked really hard for and invested a lot into. And so I think with things like that, you know, everybody's invested into their future in some way or another. And they did it under this old paradigm that the world was going to just continue to be normal. So when that's kind of ripped out
well, underneath of course.
You, you know, you've got to kind of reassess. And there are plenty of things to grieve about in terms of what a person might have lost. I really feel like a lot of the pro-lockdown people are very judgy in that regard. And there's sort of like this attitude that they feel like, well, as long as they're okay and they're not suffering, they don't care that everyone else is miserable. They don't care about the human cost that everyone else is suffering, especially like children who have just had like their whole world turned upside down and don't even understand it, which is just horrible. But, you know, I think for people maybe like, you know, in their 20s and 30s who are kind of just, you know, trying to get their lives started, you know, trying to put together a plan for the rest of their life, which I would imagine that's probably the age group of most of your audience listening here. You know, that's quite challenging. It's hard enough to try to become an adult, even under the old paradigm. And now all of the plans that you've made for your future, getting married, having kids, like that stuff has a time limit on it. You know, some people don't have years to waste under these ongoing lockdowns that they're talking about, right? So I think it's
it's a very strange thing because you obviously grow up thinking that I'm going to have my 20s and I'm going to have my 30s and there'll be phases in that. I'll have my early 20s, I'll have my mid 20s, I'll have the first job, I'll have the first promotion, I'll have the first relationship. You know, this is something that came up in one of the previous streams. I was saying that I heard about some graduates who have started their working lives in a professional sector and they're working from home on laptops when they would normally be in an office. And that's just one example of this. I mean, there are birthday parties, there are weddings, there are everything that are not happening as you would expect them to happen. And then that affects like the course of your life, the course of your 20s, the course of your 30s. If you're not going to have these experiences that your parents took for granted and you were raised expecting to take for granted, it's not just that you won't get to do certain things, it's that your own psychological development is now thwarted.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think there's a sense that this is really unfair. And, you know, I can't really fault anybody if they have been spending a lot of time feeling sorry for themselves over this, because there's plenty to feel sorry about. But the thing is, like, you know, you're going to be in lockdown for months. And it's going to keep going. They're going to, you know, this is the whole plan to kind of like squeeze and release. And I don't think, you know, it's not healthy to spend all that time in lockdown in a state of depression. And I think that's where a lot of people have found themselves this year and will find themselves again next year. So, you know, the real question is like, well, I guess it's kind of a twofold question. It's like, well, how do you avoid falling into depression in the first place? And that might still be relevant to some people. But for a lot of people, the real question is like, well, they're already depressed. So how do you get yourself out of that? Right. And that's probably,
these were relevant to people before the lockdown. You know, there are a lot of young guys, a lot of young women who are lost. That was the case even before all of this. So go on.
It's true. I mean, for people who've already, you know, fallen into this state of despair, they were probably already in kind of an unhealthy state even before this started. You know, they were already struggling to cope in the pre-2020 world. And there were a lot of broken people, like before even any of this began, when we had incredible stability and wealth. And it's really understandable that people who are already struggling to function would feel just utterly crushed by this past year. And it becomes, you know, it becomes a challenge at that point then, you know, what, if you were already struggling and then more stuff is dumped on you, like, then what do? Like, you kind of feel like you're drowning. And, you know, on the one hand, there's an opportunity to rise above all of this, and you have to sort of make a choice to do that. Like, if you're in rough waters that have a strong undertow, you kind of need to be a very strong swimmer to pull yourself out of that, right? You know, you've got to be able to do that so that you don't drown. And the modern world is a bit like that right now. There's a lot of forces pulling us down, and a lot of this is obviously by design. You know, is your will strong enough to resist it, to swim against it and pull yourself to land? You know, you wouldn't be to blame for letting it pull you under, because it is very strong, but you have to make a decision. And, you know, you don't want to, when you're in that water, you know, because you've become over emotional, to throw your hands up and say, oh, well, this isn't what I wanted. This isn't fair. And so you don't even try to swim. You just give up in despair and sink to the bottom. You know, you do have a better chance of defending against that kind of despair if you've developed a rational and logical outlook. And
yeah, and that's easier said than done. I mean, what, just for the sake of it, I should say that what Kat is describing here, that's what I was like when I was, 19 through to mid-30s. You know, I didn't realize that, you know, you've actually got to fight to survive. That's not so, somehow I got through my childhood and adolescence without learning that lesson. And I think I'm far from alone, actually, in that. It seems like an obvious lesson, but it's actually, for a lot of people, it's not. You can't just hope for the best. You can't just hope that you'll get through it somehow. You actually have to take practical steps. And that's doubly true now with the new conditions.
Absolutely. You really need to be willing to take the initiative, take some responsibility for how you're feeling and the direction of your life, even if, you know, a lot of it feels out of your control right now. And, you know, a lot of people in our circles have even seen this kind of stuff coming. You know, we shouldn't be surprised at what's happening, given what we know. We shouldn't have the same problem as the normie who's utterly disoriented by this and can't make any sense of it. You know, people who think, oh, well, as soon as the vaccine comes, everything's going to be fine, because they don't understand the bigger picture. People like us who are very aware of this should be able to quickly adjust our perspective. And no matter how desperate your situation is, you do have to make that decision that you're going to do whatever you have to do to survive. Your situation might be utterly terrible, and maybe you are doomed, but none of us get out of this life alive. And you do have an opportunity here, a very unique opportunity, to choose heroism. If you ever wanted that opportunity, it's really upon you right now.
What do you imagine getting worse? I mean, when you say that things could get worse for people, can you go into that? Any examples of that? I mean, because I'm thinking, you know, well, what do you mean? You know, how bad could it get?
I mean, worst case scenario, I think, you know, we could be looking at a complete, like, techno-communist dystopia. The people who are in charge of orchestrating all this always go all the way. History shows that whenever they have an opportunity to take power and remake the world, you know, questions of morals and ethics and human rights don't seem to concern them. You know, they don't start starving out a population and then suddenly say, oh, gee, too many people are dying from starvation. That seems really mean. Maybe we should stop. No, they say, oh, great, people are dying from starvation. Let's keep going. Because, like, they're just utterly psychopathic people who want to do this. And, you know, we cannot expect any mercy or quarter from them. Anything that they give us that even seems like a bit of mercy, I always look at a bit suspiciously, because it's like, what are the strings attached to this, right? And it's just like, you know, any of the freedoms they're trying to saying that they're going to give back to us now, it's always going to be with strings attached from here on out. It's not, you know, they're like the arsonist who sets a building on fire and then shows up to put out the fire to pretend that they're the hero.
Yes.
Like, that's it. Yes.
One of those sick things. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I mean, obviously, I'm fascinated. And I actually thought that this would have come up more on Millennial than it has. I find this whole thing about the Great Reset and, you know, the lockdown very, very interesting. And I'm surprised that so far not many people have had much to say about it. Obviously,
well, you still have the rest of the month. It's still early.
Oh, yeah, of course. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying. Now, you and I have talked about it privately, but I think it. I mean, do you want to go into that, or do you want to concentrate on the psychological well-being?
For the sake of your channel and mine, we probably shouldn't go too much into it. There are other people who are taking those risks right now, and I encourage people to seek out those channels while they still exist. You know, if you follow me on Telegram, I do share them once in a while. So, yeah, maybe let's focus on how to cope with the new reality. Because we could endlessly analyze what they're doing to us and why, but that doesn't really help anybody in a practical day-to-day sense. And I think too much consumption of that kind of content can be very black-pilling for people at a time when they're already quite. Yeah, it's I found for myself I do kind of have to limit how much of that content I consume because it starts to make me very anxious and I start to, you know, I get quite down. I have to make sure that I'm really moderating, like how much of that I'm letting into my life. And I would, you know, if anybody else out there is feeling very anxious about that, you know, maybe consider limiting your consumption of that kind of material. Learn as much as you need to know to make the decisions that you need to make and leave it at that probably.
Yes. And I would second that advice because there is an easy tendency. It's easy to fall into this thing of just endlessly ruminating over how bad the situation is. And I've seen it in the movement for 7 years. I'm not going to say that I didn't inadvertently go for that myself sometimes. Sometimes I did. But nonetheless, it's something I'm now conscious. Yeah, but I'm now consciously aware of it and as a danger. But especially with this. It's fairly straightforward. The situation is fairly straightforward. It's only a matter of what new techniques they devise along the way. But it's pretty obvious what's going on. So we don't really.
They're moving towards our enslavement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like what was the Molyneux video? The history of your enslavement. You could do the future of your enslavement.
Yeah.
a response to Molyneux. Well, anyway, so yes, indeed, there's a danger in ruminating over this stuff endlessly. Yeah. So,
and I think it's much more productive use of people's time to focus on building themselves up so that they can actually survive this. Because knowing what's coming is useful in a sense that it allows you to prepare for it, but you do actually need to prepare for it. And that starts with really kind of building up your own internal resilience, you know, learning skills that are going to help you survive this. So, I mean, first and foremost, what people need to do is, you know, take care of your family if you've got one. You need to build yourself up strong in the mind. Otherwise, you do become demoralized and you fall into despair. And then you're defeating yourself. Like, we don't want to be so weak that all the system had to do was to force us to watch Netflix for a year and we just utterly collapse. Like, think of it in that sense. I mean, it's when you think of it like that, you almost kind of feel like, I don't know, it feels a bit pathetic. It's like, oh gee, like I was going to be this great warrior against the system and oh, they're going to lock me in my house for a year and I'm just ready to give up now. Like, things could get so much worse. So, you know, count your blessings that, you know, maybe you even still have Netflix. What kind of a world are we living in where that's a blessing?
there is a sense of,
I almost feel like I'm sorry that I said that.
But I know what you're meaning. There is a sense that if that is all it takes to fell a man of the West, then yeah, there's something wrong there. You should have been more resilient than that. So yeah, I mean, Netflix isn't that bad.
Well, depends what you're watching, but yeah, I mean, and this isn't to diminish the suffering that people are going through. I know it's, you know, it's more than just about watching Netflix. Obviously, there's, you know, there's a lot of other things that are going on for people in their lives that are contributing to them feeling broken. It's kind of like if you found out you had cancer, but you already had like diabetes and a heart condition all at the same time. And then it's like, well, the treatments you need to go through to heal one of those things are now not available to you because you've got all these other health issues that are compounding the problem. So it would be hard enough to fight cancer when it's the sole problem you have to deal with, because like, but then it becomes really challenging if you have to sort of balance a multitude of very dire factors all at once. And I think that's kind of what it's been like for a lot of people who are already struggling before this year. It's like they already had the equivalent of like a bunch of diseases, and then they're told that they have terminal cancer on top of it, but you can't have any of the treatments because they'll kill you. Right?
Yeah.
Like, where do you go from there? And I mean, even I've experienced that even just in my own life from a literal perspective, was trying to balance like multiple health problems where treating one exacerbated another. And it's, you know, it's challenging. And it's probably even more challenging when it's your mental health that you're dealing with, because it's not something that's really tangible, right? And you don't necessarily know how to go about fixing some of your mental habits that are giving you a hard time.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, with that, the stage set, let's move on to, you know, your own practical advice about this stuff, because I think that's what people are going to be waiting for here.
Wow. I don't want to disappoint anybody, like, way to put the pressure on me.
Sorry, yeah. I didn't mean to do that. I thought you were, that was what you wanted to talk about.
Well, I don't want people thinking that I have all the answers, but I can give some advice, and, you know, people can certainly try it out and see if it works for them. I mean, not everything works for everybody. And to a large extent, you really kind of have to forge your own path and experiment with what works for you. But I would say that if you are so utterly in despair that you cannot even get out of bed, and I know that there are probably some people in that position right now. If there's, you know, there's people who will say that, oh, if you want to get over your depression, you need to like go exercise every day or something, right? And they'll give you these kind of practical things. It's like, well, yeah, it's true that if you exercise every day, it will help stave off depression, but it's not particularly useful if you're so depressed already that you can't even muster up the motivation to get out of bed and put your shoes on. If that's the state somebody's in, like really rock bottom, maybe even like suicidal or something, the best remedy for that is probably to pray. It's not really the time to meditate or philosophize or try to strategize your way out of a material predicament. It's really just time to pray, because that's the only strength that you're going to have available to you at that point. It's also something you can do while you lie in bed. Like, you don't even have to get up for it. So if you're too depressed to even like find the motivation to meditate or exercise or eat healthy, or even just find like a tiny bit of joy in anything, like when you've reached a point where you're at that level of darkness, you need God at that point. That's when you will reach out like at the deepest level of sincerity. And you may even feel like God was never there for you before. And so maybe you don't even feel like this is something that you want to do, but you know, you do find him there in your darkest hour. Even, I think, just the strength of the concept of God can bring a person into a sort of like calm centeredness. It's a very powerful idea that even just sort of like putting the mind onto that idea can bring you some kind of peace. Even if it's just something like you've imagined it, you know, some people, oh, it's just a figment of your imagination. Like, there is really no other idea that can do that for you, even if it is just your imagination. Like, nobody in their darkest time is thinking of science to bring them peace when they're in despair. Like, that's for sure. you know, you don't cry out to the universe for help when you've been in a car accident. You reach out to God. So even if you're not a religious or spiritual person at all, even if you're convinced that you're an atheist, I mean, it doesn't hurt you to try it. So that's the first thing I would suggest.
That's if people are at the darkest level of depression.
Well, even if you're not there yet, it still doesn't hurt to do it. But if you're at such a point where there's nothing you can do, like you cannot even take basic care of yourself because you're just really struggling to function, then that is the option that's still available to you.
And okay.
It's an option that I would recommend to anybody who is really feeling like they've hit rock bottom and they don't have the strength to do anything else to help themselves. Okay. Especially people like in lockdown and stuff, this is especially pertinent just because people are so isolated, especially people who live by themselves, for example, and who don't even have a friend to go see, or maybe normally they might see a psychologist or something and they don't have access to that person anymore. They may be like really truly feeling like they're completely on their own, and that can make it even harder.
Right. Okay. So let's move on from that sort of dire state. What if you can get out of bed?
Well, then you need to start focusing on things that you can do practically in terms of your own self-care. That's where advice like, oh, just exercise every day starts to have some relevance. Now, what you're able to do under lockdown, you know, that might vary depending on where you're at, what the weather's like. You know, if it's too cold to go for a walk, then you might be limited to staying home and, you know, doing some body weight exercises or something like that. Maybe some places still have a gym open. Maybe, you know, you can ride a bike. I think it's a case of making small decisions where you're going to choose to structure your day. This is like, you always kind of have a choice. And every moment of the day, you're making a series of choices, right? So first you have to choose to get out of bed. Then you have to choose to have a shower and choose to get dressed and choose to feed yourself. And then choose whether or not you're going to eat something healthy or you're going to eat junk. And then you're going to choose, like, do you doom scroll on social media all day, or do you read a book and learn something? You know, there's a series of choices you can make throughout the day.
I think this is extremely important to realize, because you are affected by the things that you experience, by the experiences you have. And I think it's very important to realize that you are actually in charge of those experiences. You can choose which experiences to have throughout the day. Obviously, not all the time, not every experience, but within the sphere of your own life, and certainly if you're staying at home, yes, you are in total control of which experiences get the chance to befall and affect you. So that it kind of means like you're the disc jockey of the experiences that you have. So I think that's a crucial thing to realize, because it's the discovery of your own agency.
Yeah, and discovering your own agency is really a critical part of dealing with depression, because, you know, one of the key reasons that a person ends up feeling depressed is that they feel powerless over their lives. You know, if anybody who's ever been depressed, you know, look back at the time in your life when that was the case, and you'll come up with a whole bunch of reasons why you're depressed, right? And they're often situational, something to do with your environment, something you feel like you are powerless to change. It doesn't necessarily mean you are powerless to change it, but you believe that. You have a sense of a loss of control over your own life, like you're not in the driver's seat.
That you're just a sort of blob that gets buffeted from one bad experience to another.
Yeah, and I think, you know,
speaking personally, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. And I think under lockdowns and stuff, when so much of our freedom has been taken away from us, it's really easy to feel like you're powerless to change the situation. But it's important to understand that there are things that you can do Within the course of your day, you can still make choices, and you can still make choices that are good for you, or you make choices that are bad for you. And that is under your control. You are responsible for that. Maybe your mind isn't developed and disciplined enough to have a good control over your emotional state, and you're just still feeling overwhelmed by sadness, so you don't feel that your emotions are in your control. But you do still have the ability to choose whether or not your emotions dictate your entire day. You may be incredibly sad and down, and you might feel like you don't want to get out of bed, but you are not actually physically incapable of doing so.
It's a matter of understanding that, yes, some things can overwhelm you, but you can mount a defense, and it's better to do that before they overwhelm you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I do talk a lot about meditation. I think we might have even talked about that last year, come to think of it.
I think we did
a little bit. And I have a guided meditation up on my channel now that I made with Zurius, and which he talked to you about as well. So actually that kind of came about as a result of that, because we'd both talked about it. Neither one of us realized the other was into that sort of thing. So kudos to you.
Thank you.
You kind of had a small part of arranging that. But I don't necessarily recommend meditation for somebody who is really struggling in the depths of despair. I think if your mind is so toxic that that's the point that you're at, you might find that meditation is really difficult for you, because it makes you confront the chaos of the mind in a way that's very unsettling. It can make things worse for you. It can dredge up trauma. So that's why I say, if you're in that state, prayer can work better, because prayer can gradually sort of replace that negative undercurrent of the mind. And then, maybe later you can try meditation, which isn't to place meditation on a higher rung than prayer or anything like that. It's just that, when you do have trauma in the mind, it can be very difficult to sit with your own thoughts and feelings. So you can try meditation if you're feeling like you're up to it, and try it, if it's feeling good for you and it's beneficial for you. But if it's not working for you, there's no shame in, not doing it and just going back to prayer or focusing on more physical activities instead. Some people prefer like exercise instead of meditation. I found, when I'm struggling a lot myself, I actually prefer to do yoga rather than to meditate. I find just bringing myself back into my own body can be a bit more helpful than sitting by myself with like my own thoughts and feelings for too long when I'm already struggling with that. So I would recommend that to people, especially, and that's something, you can do at home by yourself with very minimal equipment. Really you only need a mat, and if you're not particularly flexible, maybe you need a few yoga blocks or something like that. There's a YouTube channel called Yoga with Adrienne that I really recommend to people. She's one of the biggest yoga channels on YouTube, but she's great for beginners. Like, they're pretty much any of the programs she's got on her channel, a complete newbie could do. She'll walk you through it really carefully and slowly, explaining everything as she goes. So if you've never done yoga before and you think you might like to try it while you're stuck at home, I would definitely recommend that channel for a complete beginner, especially if you're struggling with doing meditation, or if you're just kind of at a loss for like how you can keep yourself in shape and just stay more physical. But also, as I said, like, for myself, I find it really brings me back into my body, and sometimes that's a nicer place to be than in my own head.
What was that channel called?
Yoga with Adrienne. She spells her name Adrienne. So just one N, which is a little bit different from the usual, but I'm sure if you misspell it, it'll still take you to her channel. She's got 8 million subscribers.
Yeah, I find it. Okay.
But yeah, she's really good. She's got a lot of like even 30-day home programs and stuff like that. So I definitely would recommend that. Maybe someday I'll put a yoga video on my channel or something. I'm going to wait till I'm a little bit more flexible, though. I'm still working up to some things.
All right. Okay. So let's move on from that then. So I'm wondering if there's stuff specific to the lockdown. I mean, do you have any more stuff about like this to say first?
Well, look, if you're one of the people who's still fortunate enough to have a job and you're working from home, obviously a large part of your day is going to be spent doing your work. So this is maybe more tailored to people who have nothing productive to do all day at home. Spending all your time on the internet is really not going to help you. You're not going to feel good about how you've spent your time. You're probably going to spend your time reading content that's just going to depress you. It's really hard to stay away from that, I think.
Can I just intervene here? Because I was very much, just to speak from my own experience, I was very much in that. Well, as it won't come as any surprise to anyone to know that I am on the internet a lot of the time.
No.
Yeah. And a few months ago, I started deliberately tearing myself away from it and just watching a DVD. And it's amazing how nice you actually start looking forward to doing it each day. I would watch a like a half hour or 50 minute TV drama. I'd watch an episode each day. And it was just a time when I would stop working, I'd close Telegram so I wouldn't get the damn notifications. And just watch something and switch off for a while. And it was a really nice thing to do. Also, I got around the same time I got banned from Twitter again. And that was the final time. I just didn't have any desire to rejoin after that. I've been creating sock accounts and over the last couple of years. And this time I just thought I cannot be fucking bothered. And I just didn't. And so I didn't do it. And much like smoking, Twitter now just feels like something that somebody else used to do. Not me. You know, it's just not me anymore. And it's great. It's really good to be off Twitter. I can vouch for that. But I think it's related. I think it's a similar thing to just watching watching a TV drama. Because I used to do that all the time before I started my channel. And at that point, you sort of just enter this, you become obsessive about the internet and social media and keeping up with things and researching things. So it's a natural thing for a content creator to do, natural way of life for them to fall into. But it's not good. And so as you say, it's good to get away. And there are various things you can do. Reading would be one of them. Obviously, socializing, if you can still do that during lockdown. And it's nice just to get away from all of this.
Yeah. And I think, despite whatever people maybe feel like they've lost from their life that they're grieving for, the fact is that as an adult, you rarely get so much free time. So you could choose to look at this as an opportunity that may not come again. I don't know, it probably will, but we'll see. Fingers crossed that it doesn't. But take the few months that you have where you've got nothing else to do and choose to use it to learn something that, you know, maybe you otherwise never would have had time to do. It's not a good idea to just spend the whole day watching TV or playing video games or anything, you know. There's nothing wrong with doing a little bit of that, but I would recommend that if you're struggling with depression or low productivity, I would recommend saving that for the end of the day after you've done everything else that you need to do. So the question is then how to fill the rest of your day. So, as I said, you can start your day with some prayer or meditation, a bit of exercise or whatever, and then it's like, well, you've got the whole afternoon to kill. I would suggest if you're struggling to come up with ideas of productive ways to fill your time, perhaps write down a list of things that you wish you had learned earlier in life. So maybe it's a foreign language or a musical instrument or some practical skill like cooking or some academic topic that's always interested you or, you know, whatever you can think of. And it can be as ridiculous and fantastical as you want. Like maybe when you were a kid, you always wanted to be a paleontologist because you were fascinated with dinosaurs. So you can put that on your list too. Like maybe the time has passed for you to ever be a paleontologist in real life. But if you're still kind of interested in that topic, or even if you just once thought it was like the coolest thing ever, it goes on your list.
You can be a You could be a paleo conservative instead.
You could do that as well, yeah. But so write everything down that comes to mind, and then I would say circle the one that you would most love to learn regardless of any time or money considerations, like the thing that would just be like your number one choice no matter what. Circle also the one that would be the easiest and the quickest to learn, and then also the one that would just be the most enjoyable, kind of like regardless of its practical value. So this should give you like some idea of what you might like to prioritize, what might be realistic to pursue. And then you can spend some time thinking about like, well, how can I learn these things during lockdown? Like, are there online courses I can sign up for or YouTube tutorials? Is there a book or some other supplies that I need to acquire in order to do this? Is there a teacher that offers online lessons? You know, what resources do you need to gather up in order to be able to learn one of these things that you've chosen? And maybe you're a quick learner and you choose more than one thing. But if you're struggling with depression, maybe just choosing one is the best way to go. Either something that you're very, yes, very interested in, or if you're more motivated by making progress than something that's quick and easy to learn. So like for myself, I've spent most of the year under like a pretty severe lockdown. I've done a lot of reading, but I've also signed up for an online course. I've done all my singing lessons online. I've gotten a lot better at yoga since I actually had time to do it every day. And that's not to say that, you know, I wasn't still grieving the loss of, you know, the future that I had planned or the things that I wanted to do, that I wasn't missing, you know, my old life. But as I said before, you know, you always have that choice. How are you going to spend this day? And you don't need to plan out your whole future under the new paradigm. You don't need to do that. I think that's too much stress, especially for somebody who's struggling already with depression. There's this tendency to be like, oh, my life has fallen apart. And now my mind needs to search for solutions to fix it and come up with a new 10-year plan. And then you're kind of panicking because you don't know what to come up with. Nothing sounds as good as the thing that you had your heart set on before. And you don't know what the future holds anyway. So how can you make plans under this, like these constantly changing rules now? You can't do that. Just focus on getting through one day and make it a good day.
Well, I mean, another... I think it's vital that it's the typical advice for people with depression is baby steps. It's the most important thing that you need to tell someone with depression is do not set yourself up for failure by taking on too much and having unrealistic goals that you will inevitably fail at, and then you'll learn the lesson of failure from failing. That's terrible. Exactly. It's a vital, vital thing, is set realistic goals. And I think that, yeah, on the one hand, as you say, your 10-year plan that you had for the pre-lockdown world, it might seem like nothing compares to that. But that's not necessarily the case, because imagine if the lockdown hadn't happened, COVID hadn't struck, and then you'd had that 10-year, you know what? Loads of people's 10-year plans come to nothing. They are cut short at 3 years or 5 years or 9 years or 1 year or 10 days. That's often the case in the way it actually plays out, because, you know, people aren't careful and they're not conscious of dangers and they're not conscious about springing back from trips, from accidents. So I think a more sensible way to look at this would be think about what you can, baby steps, and think about what you can do in the next year. Because after all, when this whole lockdown started, there was a strange optimism, a sort of cope. It should have been a rational response, but actually I think in most cases it was a cope, which was that people said, but this is an opportunity. We don't need to be depressed about this. This is going to be a new way of living for a while, and we're going to have hobbies and new interests. But really, that is true. But it should have been that. But I think for many people it wasn't, because they sort of took for granted that, yeah, I'll get through this, it's fine. And then they just forgot about those plans and learning those new skills and pursuing those new hobbies and so on. And so, I mean, how many people, I wonder, you know, what percentage of people now, 9 months into the lockdown, what percentage of people can say that they actually did pursue those hobbies, that they actually did take this opportunity that the lockdown presented? Probably quite few of them. I would take a rough guess. And so I think that probably a lot of people could look back at this year and think, I actually didn't make use of this. So I would say, be more conscious about this from here on. You know, you don't want to be here like at the end of next year or, you know, 9 months from now and say, I wasted those first 9 months and then I wasted the second 9 months as well. That's just stupid. I mean, obviously, you know, this is a sort of chance to think about, to be conscious of it now. You know, this is time that we are all in various ways being afforded. Now, it might come with a cost. It might be you've lost your job or whatever it is, but it's still an opportunity. So I would say, you know, be conscious of having a plan and a realistic one as well.
Yes. And, you know, on the flip side of that, while baby steps are important, you know, the thing, like what you were saying, you know, people are thinking, oh, this is going to be great. We're all going to have hobbies and stuff. It is a bit dismissive of what people have lost, that the things that they lost were maybe more important to them than just having a hobby or free time. I feel like a lot of the people who thought that it was going to be great were people who didn't really have like much of a life beforehand.
As I say, I think it was a cult.
Like, yeah, it was a bit. And like, you know, I know of a few ladies who were, they were going through IVF treatments that were interrupted by the lockdowns. Like that was maybe like their last chance to have a baby. They didn't have a year to waste while their IVF clinic was closed, right? And the stress of the lockdowns, of course, is probably going to make it even harder for them to conceive if they get another chance. All that money wasted, all those hopes and dreams gone. Like, I'm sorry, but no hobby is going to console somebody in that position.
Absolutely. There's, it's like, criminal what's been done here.
All that person sees is what has been taken from them. And, you know, there's... people have a lot of good reasons to be sad and depressed. Like, I don't want anybody to think that I'm telling you that you shouldn't be depressed about stuff, because there are a lot of legitimate reasons for that. All I'm saying is that in the future that's coming, if you want to survive, you're going to have to make a choice. And to some extent, you know, we need to maybe be a little bit more non-attached to the future. One thing that can cause, you know, well, probably the number one thing that causes disappointment is your own expectations. When you have an expectation that isn't met, you feel disappointed. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter whether or not you felt that that expectation was legitimate. If I tell you to meet me at the train station at 9 a.m. and I know that you're always half an hour late, I don't really have any right to feel disappointed when you show up at 9:30 unapologetic, right? Like, be like, oh, well, I always knew he was late. Why did I expect any different, right? And you can extrapolate that to pretty much anything in your life. When you have expectations, that's when you set yourself up for disappointment and heartbreak, sadness down the road when those things are not met. So we all had expectations about the future that we wanted to have for our own lives. Many of us will not get those things. Some of us had plans that, you know, we cannot easily claw back after the missing time. Some people might be able to get back on track, but they'll feel like they're really behind the curve. You know, so to some extent, it's kind of like, well, this is the new world that's occurring, and there isn't a whole lot we can do about it. All we have to do now is try to figure out how to survive in the new paradigm, especially if it does, you know, come worst case scenario, dystopian scenes from, you know, whatever Hollywood movie you can imagine. The thing is, and like, if you're struggling to figure out something to learn during your free time, like, at least maybe learn a skill that might be useful during an apocalypse, like become an expert in cryptocurrency or farming or something, like, you know, something that might actually be useful to help you survive. But I feel like for a lot of people who have lost all of their hopes and dreams, they just feel like it's just been completely crushed. You know, a lot of those people have become very suicidal, like suicide rates are just skyrocketing in every country that's done lockdowns, which of course nobody talks about because, you know, apparently all lives matter except when it's people who oppose lockdowns and just want to have their lives back. And those people seem to be kind of ignored. You know, there's that kind of desire for extinction, to escape your own suffering. You know, as most people who watch my channel know, like my kind of flagship work is like Julius Evola's stuff. And when Evola was in his 20s, he wanted to commit suicide, and he cleansed himself of his desire for suicide by studying the Buddhist Theravadic text, because, you know, it's actually out of, like, you're all going to die anyway, right? Your desire for extinction is a guaranteed thing. It's coming so fast anyway. So it's the last thing you should even be worrying about. But that desire for extinction is still a desire. And the whole point of, like, Buddhism is cultivating this non-attachment to material things, and it is
and control with your desires,
and to shed the desires completely, to shed your desires, your aversions, to the point that you can just be equanimous with what is. No matter what comes, you can still maintain that calm centeredness because you didn't have an attachment to some desire. For people who are even feeling suicidal, it's like you need to let go of your desire to not exist. And you find, you know, that that's just one more attachment. It's still a type of bondage to this life. I think when you kind of embrace the whirlwind of the Kali Yuga, you become free-spirited enough to dance on the razor's edge without cutting yourself. And so if you're feeling like you have nothing worth living for, and you're feeling like you want to die, it's like, well, if you have nothing worth living for, I mean, you could kind of flip that around and say, well, I have no attachments then. And then you're free. But the thing is, that desire for suicide is, that is still an attachment. It's still a desire. And it's one born out of the fact that they are unable to let go of their attachments to the things they wanted and can't have, or their aversion to a certain circumstance that they don't like, you know, in this case, lockdowns, but it could be, you know, anything that's causing them distress.
Of course, but I mean, few people will be capable of such self-mastery that they start enjoying the lockdown.
No one says you have to enjoy it. And, you know, I mean, not everyone can even do this, but, you know, not everyone listens to Millennial either. So I imagine that there's probably a lot of high quality, exceptional people who listen to these streams. And so there's probably a greater chance that, you know, if you're listening to this, you're going to be more likely to be able to lift yourself up. You need to do the best you can within the parameters that you have. You know, there's still a lot that you can achieve, even if it's not what you wanted. None of us are getting out of this life alive. Most of us aren't going to get what we want in this life. And I mean, from a more spiritual perspective, this life is not about getting what we want. It's about, you know, learning the lessons that we need to learn, clearing our karma, hopefully not garnering too much, you know, new bad karma. But, you know, when you kind of, and like, people make fun of me for my interest in astrology all the time. But, you know, one thing I will say is that in my study of astrology and tracking the cycles, you know, the planetary cycles and the symbolic language of astrology. And, you know, one thing you learn is that, you know, that wheel of fortune is always turning. You know, just because something's bad now, it does get better. And just because something's good now, it's not like nothing in this life is permanent. Nothing. And when you understand that and you can take a more equanimous approach to your circumstances, it is very freeing. It does allow you to have more internal strength and resilience. And I think that, you know, that kind of mindset might help people through that. There's a number of people that I've talked to, you know, when they were struggling particularly, and I've kind of like pulled up their astrology chart and looked at their transits and stuff. I'm like, right, so this is a really crappy time for you. I would expect, you know, by such and such a day, it's going to be, you know, things are going to be feeling better for you. But when you're like so mired in your own emotional pain, you can't be objective like that. You can't see a way out. All you can see is how much you're hurting and how much you're suffering.
Yeah.
It feels like it's never going to end. Just getting through the next hour feels like an eternity, right?
I mean, there are times when the only thing you can do is literally get through it. The only thing you can do is pass the time because, that sounds, to someone who hasn't had experience of depression, that will sound ridiculous. I know. But I have had experience of depression and I know how bad it can get. No doubt other people have had it even worse than me. But I know that it can be so bad that the only thing to do is just get through these minutes and hours. But of course, as you said, the incredible fact of it is that it does end. Your own emotional state changes, the life circumstances change. Due to mental happenings, but intellectual ideas, but also just due to chemicals, just emotional states. So it all does pass. I think that's a very important thing to remember.
Right. And even though it feels like it's not going to while you're in it, especially if it's like long-term depression that's really like chronic for somebody, it can feel like, you know, maybe they've been depressed like most of their life and stuff like that. You know, some of that is your own mental habits and your inability to kind of readjust your thinking. Many people are their own worst enemies in that regard. Like a lot of the mental suffering that people put themselves through is just because they have poor patterns of thinking that bring them suffering. You know, they're too much like trying to control their environment or control other people, or they struggle to regulate their own emotions, or and that's not to blame anybody.
No, but it's a skill that can be learned. That's the point.
It is a skill that can be learned. And, you know, I said this last week in another interview. The thing is that you can always... I didn't like the way I phrased it. I'm just trying to think of a better way to phrase it. You always kind of have a choice in how you respond to things. Now I've kind of lost my train of thought because I was trying to think of how to rephrase it. I shouldn't have overthought it. Look at what I've done. I've ruined everything. Right.
That's fine. Don't worry. I can rescue it. Let me clarify something, because someone else said saying to people that it passes is a bit difficult to believe. Telling someone it passes is easier said than done, sadly. Yeah. Now, I want to qualify this. The extremes of depression pass. You know, that sense of hopelessness and suicidal urges and all that passes. What doesn't necessarily pass is the long-term depression. They're just feeling shit and your life is crap. Because the fact is, your life may well be crap. So you're going to continually feel that. And that is what Kat and I are talking about, that you can take practical steps to actually change. That is the thing that is within your agency to affect, and the extremes as well sometimes, but sometimes not. But the general thing of that you can take control of your life, that is a very crucial point to bear in mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no matter like what circumstance you're in, you know, even if you're like a prisoner in solitary confinement or something, and you have like literally no control over your life, the one thing that no one can ever take away from you is the control you have over your own inner world. To some extent, you know, if you are long-term depressed, it is because you're choosing that. And, you know, yes, take responsibility for it, but I would say also maybe instead of, I don't want anybody to beat themselves up over it. I feel like telling people like, oh, you chose this, is like encouraging people to like beat themselves up over it. I would say approach it more with a mentality of curiosity. Like, why do I believe these things? Like, examine your existing presuppositions about yourself and your life. A lot of people who are like long-term chronically depressed, they have a lot of incorrect beliefs about themselves, about other people, about their situation, and they become very attached to these beliefs. They've developed a whole narrative around it that they're not really willing to give up. In that case, the question that I would be asking myself if I were in that situation is, what benefit do I get out of believing these things? So look for the beliefs that are keeping you depressed. And then ask yourself, regardless of whether or not you believe it's true, is almost beside the point. What short-term and what long-term benefits are you getting out of believing that? And so a person might get really defensive and be like, well, I don't get any benefits. I'm depressed. I'm miserable. Some people actually want to be miserable. Some people like having that crutch. Maybe they get self-pity out of it, and that's their benefit, or they get pity from other people.
Or just the comfort of the familiar.
They don't want to step out of their comfort zone. They don't. It's easy. You know, failure is like the default setting, right? It's easy to fail. It's easy not to try. It's easy to say, well, I'm just a victim. I couldn't do anything about this. Poor me. That's the path of least resistance. And, you know, one of my rules for life is that sloth wins. Like, people always take the easiest way. Just like, you know, water running down a hill takes the path of least resistance. To be successful in life requires a lot of really hard work. It requires sacrifice. It requires stepping outside of your comfort zone. It requires challenging yourself. It's just like, you know, you don't get stronger in the gym if you don't lift weights and lift heavy weights and push yourself to the point of failure.
Somebody's just put in a comment here in the live chat that might be relevant. At one point, I managed to get away from depression and all that bad stuff, but the lack of fulfillment kept me feeling empty anyway.
I guess he's kind of referring to like a sort of nihilism.
Yeah, well, I think it's relevant to what you were saying, because basically, if you don't challenge yourself and continue to develop, then that is going to lead to depression, or at least a lack of satisfaction.
Well, I think for a lot of people who end up like that, it's like, I think for some of us, you know, we feel like this world is very unsatisfactory and we don't belong here. We want something higher and more idealistic, and we feel disappointed when we look at the world the way that it is. I mean, I've certainly felt that myself many times. And it's contributed in the past to some nihilism on my part that I've had to struggle with myself. When you can't find that higher meaning, you know, in your day-to-day life, in the things that other people find so meaningful, then I think that's when you maybe need to look beyond this world and really consider cultivating a spiritual practice. And aiming more towards a vertical path rather than a horizontal path, which is where I think the vast majority of people seem to find their fulfillment. If the usual things that bring people meaning and happiness seem empty to you, then you need to look to the transcendent. And I don't even, like, I'm not any kind of like dogmatic ideologue in that regard. I don't even care what path people take to connect with the transcendent. As long as they find it and it works for them, I'm genuinely happy for them. Like, whether that's through some kind of organized religion or just, you know, some other path that you find, I would say for anybody who's, you know, the person who commented in particular, you know, look towards a spiritual practice and keep looking until you find one that's a good fit for you. Don't just try one or two and say, oh, this isn't working for me, and give up. You might have to go through quite a few different options to find something that really resonates with you and the path that your soul is on.
So I'm just reading the questions that are coming, and that could you put questions on entropy so that we can find them easily? Otherwise, they get lost in the chat. That's always the way. Okay, and somebody has said, just wanted to thank you for this stream. Philosophicat is so wise, calming, and pleasant to listen to.
Aw, thank you.
Yeah, and yeah, other people have been saying similar things in the live chat as well. So, and I think that you are a popular guest each year, so it is nice to have you on. Would there be any other things that you would want to say with regard to the lockdown, to surviving that, or have you said everything you want to say about that?
Well, look,
I mean, it is a new circumstance for all of us.
It certainly is. And I mean, depression may not be new for all of us, but dealing with it in this context and in the context of a changing world, staring down the face of a future where, you know, we're really looking at kind of a culmination of the new world order coming into play very quickly. I mean, like, I've followed this stuff for years. I saw this coming, but I didn't see it coming so fast. So, like, it seems like they just really kicked it into gear overnight. Like, but what I would say to people is that no matter how bad things get, even if we do end up living in their techno-communist dystopia, there's still peace to be found in this world. A lot of us needed to shift our orientation to life anyway, so let this be a catalyst for change. And change is never, it's never pleasant. You know, it's always a bit painful. Nobody wants to change. Nobody wants to move outside of their comfort zone. And maybe you did want to change, but not on this schedule. You wanted to do it on your own time. Well, unfortunately, the time is here now. This, it is what it is. Make the best of it. You can, I mean, you know what your moral compass tells you to do. You don't actually need me or anyone else to tell you what you should be doing with your time. You know in your own heart. Write your ideals down, not to publish them or anything, but just for your own benefit. Write down what you will do and what you won't do, and make a work of your intent. Start really focusing on building yourself up to survive, you know, this culmination of what feels like a very dark age. Especially for those of us, you know, in these dissident circles who are in the know, we've known that this was coming. A lot of people even would seem to look forward to it, you know, the way that people used to talk. I'm sure you've seen it too, right? They couldn't wait for the collapse of society. Well, yeah. I mean, they're in for a bit of a rude awakening, because the collapse of society isn't going to be much fun, but it may happen no matter what. There may not be anything we can do about this, but you can use this as an opportunity for heroism in your own life. And I'm not suggesting that anybody run out and be any kind of like domestic terrorist. That is not what I mean by heroism. Just for any government officials that might be listening, I'm just like, be a hero in your own life, in for your own self, for your own family. Be a source of strength, not even just for yourself, but for the other people around you who might be too weak to do that for themselves. Be the person that other people can rely upon. Be the person who is the calm in the storm. Even if you feel like you are nowhere near being able to be that person, you can still start working towards it. I think people are stronger than they know, and you don't really realize how strong you are until you get on the other side of whatever crappy situation that you found yourself in. Because when you're in a really difficult situation, you feel weak. You feel like a failure. You feel like you can't possibly keep going. And yet, you know, somehow you do. Day after day, you manage, and eventually you get through it, and you look back on it, and you're like, gee, I don't know how I survived that, but I did. And that thing was a catalyst. Change. Yeah. Like, it changes you.
And then 5 years later, you're thinking, how did I think that I wouldn't get through that?
Yeah.
Which is quite amazing.
In hindsight, it doesn't ever seem so bad. And I think that's something people should keep in mind when they're feeling like they're just, you know, in the depths of despair. They can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. Just keep going. Just do what you have to do to survive. I do personally think that we're in for a few more years of a lot of turmoil. I think much more difficult times are even yet to come. But I'm not convinced that it's going to last, you know, for the far long term. I'm thinking maybe like another 3 to 7 years, which sounds like a long time, but it's not actually that long. And, you know, I think in order for there to be a better world anyway, you know, it's like the world needs to go through some growing pains too, right? Like, it's going to be kind of painful for all of us. I'm still optimistic that maybe something better will emerge on the other side.
Well, hopefully. Some super chats have come in. Wonderful stream. I highly recommend the books The Choice and My Friend Within by Paul Romano. The Choice and My Friend Within by Paul Romano. And he also says, good times create soft men. Soft men create hard times. Hard times create hard men. Hard men create good times. I've seen numerous humorous translations of that. I think we're all quite familiar with that saying, and it is very relevant. Another one that I'd like to maybe end this stream with is relates to what you were saying earlier, and I'm sure many people will be familiar with this. I wish it need not have happened in my time, said Frodo. So do I, said Gandalf, and so do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given us.
Exactly. All right. I always loved that part from Lord of the Rings.
Okay, excellent. Well, let's leave it at that. I think this has been a really good stream. I hope the viewers agree. It's not just me who's been enjoying it on his own. All right, hopefully it's been useful to people. So, okay, I'll put the relevant links to Philosophicat's YouTube channel. I rescued it in time. I hadn't completed the word before I realized. It's all right. I will put the relevant links to your YouTube channel and your Telegram channel so people will be able to find it.
Yeah, so, there's probably no point putting my Twitter because I'm sure I'm going to be banned soon. I can't keep my mouth shut about vaccines, so I'm sure I'll get the chopping block eventually.
Well, I can give you the encouraging news that there is life after Twitter, so don't worry about it. All right. Okay, well, thank you to everyone for watching, and thank you, Philosophicat, for taking part in Millennial 2020.
Thank you very much for having me. I hope everybody has a lovely Christmas.
Okay, thank you. See you tomorrow night. Oh, and I should say, hold on a minute, let me see what's on tomorrow. Because I usually do this. Let me see. Okay, we're starting with the Franklin from Reactionary Expat, then The Great Order, then Semiogog, and then Robin Riley, also known as C.C. Bucko and Critical Condition. So that's tomorrow night, and I'll see you all then. Yeah, it should be good. Okay, thank you very much for now, and I'll see you all tomorrow. Good night.